Let me introduce people around the room. Dan Klein, a legislator. Mike Delane, chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. Glenn Morey from Groton. And Leslie being Claiborne from District
1.
One. In downtown Ithaca. Marsha Lynch, our PIA person, and Kevin McGuire, our budget person in the county administrator's office. So,
and just real quickly, Dan is what district?
I'm sorry?
Seven, Caroline Danby.
Caroline Danby.
Coming through the door is Will Burbank, also a county legislator. So I think we'll begin. What I would, frankly, I'm looking at an 8:15 finish to this, if we can possibly do that. If you're going to speak to us, the microphones are there. Put your name on a list, or, you know, seeming there are so few people here that, you know, it should work pretty easily. If we have it, we'll start up and then go on from there. And that is Mike Sigler, a rep from the town of Lansing, Martha Robertson coming through the door. Joe, go ahead. You're on. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim, and welcome to everybody who's here. I'm going to present essentially the same budget presentation that I made when the kickoff of the budget began on the first Tuesday of September. So if you see legislators around the table who look like they're about to drift into sleep, it's not because this is a boring presentation. It's just that they've heard it several times now. So don't read anything into the body language. So as we always do when we explain our budgets, we explain that a budget isn't just an accounting document, that it's shaped by a number of things in our environment. It's a product of that environment, and there are several factors that affect our budget, beginning with the economy. And county budgets are hypersensitive to the economy because we're in the human service business, and we rely a lot on sales taxes. So when the economy goes down, the demand for human services goes up, and our ability to pay for those services goes down because sales tax is affected. So we watch the economy very closely when we're figuring out how to build our budget, beginning with looking at unemployment. And the trend here is good. You can see that the unemployment rate, interestingly, didn't bounce right back to pre-recession levels when the recession was technically over. It actually kept climbing through about 2012 and didn't begin to decline until 2013, but fortunately now is almost where it was before the recession began back in 2008. Certainly a good sign for us. Another good factor in the economy is inflation is practically zero. So inflation is our friend right now. Commodity prices are pretty stable, and that makes it easier to balance our budget without too much stress on revenue sources. Consumer confidence, this is often an odd one to look at. Not everybody does. But we find that when consumer confidence is strong, people are feeling good about what the future is. They're buying things. They feel more confident that they can afford to buy something and that they'll be okay down the line. And when they buy things, there's a sales tax on those sales. There's mortgage taxes. There are other revenues that come our way. So the trend here is good. It's been going up. There's been a small decline over the past few months, but the trend is up. Now, on the negative side, we track sales taxes. Sales taxes are just a surrogate for consumer spending. And we had a real setback the first half of this year. The first quarter was down in sales tax receipts, which means spending. And by the first half of the year, spending, consumer spending and sales taxes were down 2.6%. That's a meaningful reduction in sales taxes, and it's something that we're watching very closely right now. It tempered how we approach the 2016 budget. If you look at the stock market, it's been an incredibly steep increase since the recession ended, but over the past few weeks, now a few months, the trend has been not so good. There have been some sharp declines in the stock market. The programmatic trends that affect our budget, there are many, but we highlight a few that have the most important effect. We always look at food stamp, now called SNAP cases. Not because we pay for food stamps, because it's a really good barometer of underlying public need. And so we watch it very closely. And you can see how quickly food stamp cases in this county went up after the recession. That's where this chart begins. and how high they rose and how long that trend line kept going up. But you can also see that over the past year or so, there's been a stabilization in that number and a small decline, but again, at a very high plateau. When we look at temporary assistance cases, used to be called welfare, temporary assistance cases, they remain high. That thick red line there is where we were before the recession. And you can see, not unexpectedly, that the number of cases rose sharply after the recession. The surprising thing is a lot of people seem to have been left behind. It kept growing through 2014. We didn't peak until 2014, and only now are beginning to come down from peak, again, at elevated levels compared to where we were before the recession. We think a number of people have been left behind. We care for children who are in abusive and neglectful homes. We place them in homes when we find that. A very costly but critical program. Caseloads there, you can see, have gone down from where they were when they peaked a few years ago. Still much higher than they were just 7 or 8 years ago, though. Now we get into the budget itself. And when we begin the budget, we begin with goals. What are we trying to achieve in this budget? And we set a few, and they're relatively similar to what you've seen in the past. We wanted to maintain current levels of service, which is a challenge. When you're facing difficult financial times, just staying level is a challenge. So we wanted to maintain current levels of service. We've been investing in our facilities and infrastructure. Post-recession, we've made a real commitment to invest in roads and bridges, and county buildings. We wanted to continue that. We wanted to address pressure points that are becoming evident in our organization, not many, but a few and critical. We wanted to address that. We wanted it to remain our strength and be resilient. We see these volatile signs in the economy, like the sales tax. We don't know what's coming next, so we want to make sure that if it turns the wrong way, we have the resiliency to get through it without creating trauma within the organization or the community. We wanted to become stronger, not bigger. We wanted to stay within the tax cap. Those are our goals. The major drivers in this budget. What are the things that really shape this budget? There are a handful, and they're very similar to what we look at every year. Labor costs, mandates in a county that's especially important. This year was kind of weird. Automotive equipment, we put it on the driver's lists. I don't think there's a pun there, but I'll talk about that in just a second. Capital investment, we wanted to continue investing in capital. Agency funding and the sales tax became a driver of our budget. So quickly through each of those, labor costs were actually kind of good this year. Our labor costs are restrained. You can see that they're only up 1.1%. That's wages and benefits. That's $500,000. That's restrained growth. The reason that we've realized that restraint, first of all, we have labor agreements that are now in place that are themselves restrained. That was certainly the most important factor in all this. But also fringe benefit costs were down for a couple of reasons. We really sharpened our pencils when we calculated pension and FICA costs. But most importantly, and this is the product of hard work and foresight, our health costs were actually down for 2016. They're down largely because we joined a health consortium a few years ago. In fact, we helped form it with all other municipalities within the county, and we are realizing significant savings as a result of that plan. That's been a huge success. Our roster is down a little bit, so we're not growing our payroll roster. It's down by a couple of FTEs in spite of the fact that we've added some new positions in some areas. I talked about organizational pressures before, some of those related to personnel, and we tried to address those in this budget. In finance, DOER is our Department of Emergency Response, the Office of Aging and Assessment. There were some reductions, though, that offset that growth in the Social Services Department and in solid waste. Our overall roster is way down from where it was in 2009. One of the ways that we maintained our balance during the recession era was to bring our roster down by attrition, and we've kept it down since then. That's about a 7% reduction, and there's the trend line. You can see when we peaked back in 2009 and where we are today. We've held our roster relatively flat. Mandates, usually we devote most of the presentation to mandates because they have always gone up. I've been doing this for a very long time now, doing county budgets, and I think this is the first time in my career I've ever uttered these words that mandate costs are actually down for 2016. They're down by $600,000. What's happening in DSS, we're beginning to see some of the benefits of a recovering economy. Their mandates are going down. Human service expenses, temporary assistance, even Medicaid is expected to go down next year. Medicaid is aided by the fact that the state has finally put in a hard cap. Those costs aren't growing anymore. And also, we're realizing meaningful savings from the Affordable Care Act. So the benefits that were described going along with ACA, we are realizing in the county's budget. On the flip side, our pre-K special education expenses are way up. They're up by $400,000. So you can see the swing in those numbers is about $600,000, and that's how much we're saving in mandates. If I don't know if you can read this or not, these are our mandated programs. The red shows those that are going up, the green going down, and the net effect is a savings. This is for us county nerds. This is an amazing chart because the cost of Medicaid just skyrocketed for the last many years. You can see, though, it peaked in 2014, and now it's come down for the reasons I described earlier, a hard cap finally and ACA. So it's down a bit again for next year. Vehicles, when times were tough, we didn't buy cars. We didn't buy light trucks, and we're paying for it now. We needed to catch up in vehicle purchases. So we've added almost $600,000 to this budget to replace some very old vehicles that are in the fleet. We have vehicles, new vehicles, in several of our departments. Some of these cars were as old as 2000, 2001. Our capital reinvestment, we've made a policy decision, did several years ago, to increase our levy by 0.5% every year and to devote that increase for capital improvements. That's $230,000, mostly for debt service on projects that have already been authorized by this legislature, roads and bridges and buildings. If we keep with that policy, that blue line is how much we will have available to us for capital. The red line is what we expect our debt expenses to be over the next 10 years. The difference is what we can begin to put into a capital reserve so we don't have to borrow as much money for capital. We can use cash instead. We also wanted to increase funding for our sponsor and agents, partner agencies. So our agencies got a 2% increase for a COLA this year. We gave a similar increase to TC3 earlier in the year. We provided additional support, mostly one-time, what we call OTRs, for agencies. And importantly, we are getting very close to closing a very large structural deficit at the public library. This is a multi-year commitment we made several years ago to bridge that structural gap. I think the last factor is sales tax. It's volatile. It's uncertain. We assumed modest growth in sales tax for next year. So over the past 3 years, we're projecting growth of only 5%. This is basically our sales tax projection, which we spent more time with the legislature. I won't burden you with that tonight. The major OTRs that we funded, these are, in our vocabulary, an OTR is an over-target request. The target is our baseline budget. The OTR is our request beyond our baseline. So the major funded OTRs, this is going to be a presidential election year, 2016. We have a board of elections. They pay for those inspectors and folks who staff the elections. So an extraordinary $123 expense is put in the budget for that in one-time money. We're going to put it in 2016 and take it out after that. Other things, we've invested in training and technology for our employees. We are down. Our roster is reduced. We believe we have an obligation to invest in our employees and their training and the tools that they have. So $100,000 for training and technology. There are new positions, as I said earlier, in a few of our departments. You've probably read that there are overtime pressures in our sheriff's office, especially in the jail. So we've increased the overtime funding for the jail. We've recognized that is just a structural situation that the budget needs to align with. We have enterprise funds, businesses that don't rely on property taxes. Our airport is the best example of that. We're in the second of a three-year plan to help the airport face some reductions in business. We have waived the fee that we charge the airport for our services. So we provide their lawyers, their accountants, their administrators. The county provides that. We charge the airport for that, have in the past. We've waived that fee to help them out a bit. And that's $126,000 savings to the airport. Solid waste is the other enterprise. The recycled commodities, the prices are way down, and that has put pressure on that budget. So there is a $4 increase in the annual fee to $56 as a part of this budget. So what have we produced? Our goal is to maintain services. We have. There's been no reduction in service. Our goal is to maintain capital investment. We did. It fully funds the projects that are in our capital improvement plan. It reinvests in roads and bridges and buildings. It does address those pressure points that we talked about in staffing and addressing the library's structural deficit, in buying cars that have to be replaced, in investing in training and technology, and providing capacity building support for our agencies, several of whom are here tonight. Our goal is to stay within the cap. We did that too. We thought the cap was going to be 1.3% when we began, so we kept our levy increase to the 1.3%. We've now got the final cap number. It's actually a bit higher than what we expected. So the cap is 1.8, so we're well within our tax cap. And then quickly through the numbers, our total budget is now $171 million. That's up less than 1% over 2015. The local budget, the part we pay with sales tax and property tax dollars. A lot of our budget comes from state and federal money. What's left is ours. That's up by 2%, which means the burden is shifting a little bit from state and federal sources to local sources, but still only a 2% growth factor. Our tax levy, as I said, is up by 1.3%. That's $600,000. The tax rate is down. The tax rate is down by almost 2%, 1.7%. And to an average homeowner, that means that when you take into account that assessments are probably going to go up next year, when you take into account that fact, an average homeowner will pay about $15 more in taxes, county taxes, next year than they do this year. And when you add in that solid waste fee, it's a little less than $20 in terms of an increase for an average homeowner. Now, there's a postscript on all this. There was a pension rate reduction. After the budget was presented to the legislature, 2 days after the budget was presented to the legislature, the comptroller announced that pension rates were going to be much lower than anybody had expected. So it's a meaningful reduction. It's good news. In the pension rates, it was unexpected. It will save us about $583,000 compared to what we had originally projected. And with that $583,000, now there's a range of choices. The bookends are we can increase local spending by $583,000 and still keep our levy at the 1.3% that's in the recommended budget. At the other end of the spectrum, we could apply that to reduce the property tax levy by the same amount, which would essentially give us a zero increase in the property tax levy. Or there's a combination of both. Between those two bookends, there's a combination of both. And so that's where we are right now. These are the big numbers that the legislature is looking at. They have completed their review of the budget. They've gone through each of the departments and agencies. They're about to consider amendments to the budget, and there will be a list of those. When that happens, they will ultimately approve an amended budget. It's called the tentative budget. It has their changes in it. That tentative budget will go to a public hearing. Something like this, although more formal. It'll be a public hearing on that tentative budget. The legislature can still decide to make changes in that budget after that public hearing. And then when that's done, a final budget will be adopted. So that's what's left in the process. And that's where we are, and I hope that provides sheds a little light on the 2016 budget.
Thank you very much, Joe. I have a list of names, and I think I want to go right to them. And please approach that microphone, tell us your name and where you live, and we will listen. And I have Roger Hopkins from Lansing, and speaking about the Capital Reserve Fund. Let's wait till that stops. It'll stop in less than 10 seconds. And please use the microphone.
Oh, okay. Thank you for your time. My name is Roger Hopkins. I'm a 14-year resident of Lansing. and I wish to speak to you and encourage your support, financial support of the Capital Reserve Fund for Natural, Scenic, and Recreational Resource Protection. And I hope we can shorten that name somewhat. In addition to being a Lansing resident, I am the past president of the Cayuga Trails Club and a member of the Board of Managers of the Finger Lakes Trail Conference. The Cayuga Trails Club has built and has maintained for 52 years more than 100 miles of hiking trails in Tompkins County and in part of Schuyler County, including 80 miles of the Finger Lakes Trail, which is a statewide resource. We accomplish this largely with member dues and donations, with nearly 4,000 hours in a typical year of volunteer effort. I believe that these trails offer some of the best natural recreation opportunities in our region and are important to both residents and visitors. The club has been fortunate to have the support of the Finger Lakes Land Trust, helping with our land management issues, landowner relations, and by providing access for our trail in several of their preserves. As a recent example, this partnership has resulted in a significant new forest preserve in the town of Enfield, which has gained wide public support of people visiting that preserve. So as you consider your goal of investment in infrastructure, I hope you will consider trails and recreational opportunities to be part of our infrastructure, and in particular a part that is valuable to our quality of life and in maintaining the character of our region. So I urge you to consider supporting the Capital Reserve Fund. Thank you.
Thank you. Liz Vance, Town of Enfield, speaking on youth services.
Good evening. My name is Liz Vance. I was a 30-year resident of Danby, and within the last couple of weeks just became a resident of Enfield. And I am also the director of the Ithaca Youth Bureau and work for the city. So I'm here this evening to ask for your support for several OTRs that, if approved, will support youth engagement and community-wide health and wellness. I'd also like to thank all of you for your continued support for our youth programs that operate out of the Youth Bureau. Please support the $11,426, 3% COLA increase for the 11 service agencies that work with youth in Tompkins County. As one of the 11 agencies that receive funding from the County Youth Services, we are charged with working on the goals identified by the county's youth needs assessment, which was completed in 2012. Our Big Brother Big Sister program, Recreation Support Services, and Youth Employment Service are programs of the Ithaca Youth Bureau that support youth. They teach skills, provide mentors, and give employment opportunities to youth across the whole county. The 3% increase allows us to keep up with the 2016 increases in minimum wage and living wage. Without the increase, we'll see impacts within the programs. Big Brother Big Sister will not be able to offer their Saturday program, which serves children who are on a waiting list for a Big Brother or a Big Sister. Our Recreation Support Services program will not hire one of their inclusion specialists who are hired to work in the summer with children with disabilities. Those programs currently have wait lists. And the Youth Employment Services' ability to provide subsidized employment opportunities will be affected. We are just one of 11 agencies who will be affected, and I imagine that between all of the agencies, the number of children who would not be served would increase. So I strongly urge you to approve that OTR. Additionally, I encourage you to support the Recreation Partnership OTR for $821. The Recreation Partnership has a 20-year history of successfully providing year-round programming for more than 4,000 youth countywide. This intermunicipal collaboration is an excellent example of how shared services can benefit communities and provide cost-effective services in our county. Additionally, the $30,000 OTR for the waterfront parks and recreation facilities is a new beginning to a cost-sharing solution that will keep our parks strong and viable for all residents. Approximately 70% of the park users and recreation facility users are Tompkins County residents who do not reside in the city of Ithaca. In 2016, a larger conversation about how our parks could be supported by all that use them will be one focus of a study that will result in a master plan for our parks and recreation facilities. As a follow-up to the presentation that Suki Tabor did for you on September 21st, we're in the process of putting together a document that answers several of the questions that you brought up, and we'll be submitting that to you tomorrow for your review. Thank you for your time and, again, for all of your support.
Thank you, Liz. Beverly Stokes, Town of Ithaca, Youth Services.
Good evening. So this is my first time at a legislature meeting, and I'm the coordinator of Youth Employment Service, which is one of the programs that Liz Vance was speaking about. And I'm here tonight to speak about the impact our program has on the community and, again, to urge you to consider the 3% cost of living adjustment, OTR, for our 2016 Tompkins County Youth Services funding. Youth Employment Service is a program of the Ithaca Youth Bureau that has been providing a range of employment-related services to teens in Tompkins County for the past 35 years. Our program is designed to build a bridge from where a teen's current skill set begins to that of a productive member of the workforce. Components of YES include job referral, job coaching, subsidized employment, and employment workshops. In 2014, we served 282 youth in Tompkins County, the majority of whom faced one or more barriers to employment. Youth received job referrals and assistance with searching for and applying to jobs in the community. We also provided one-on-one coaching with youth to help build their work readiness skills and basic life skills as necessary. Youth were matched to supportive, subsidized work placements in one of over our 50 different partner work sites. And we also served youth with workshops on application skills and interview preparation, customer service training, and financial literacy. Many employment programs are restricted with who can work based on funding requirements. And YES has a blend of high-need students and mainstream teens, which creates a more diverse environment, and that appeals to employers and teens alike. Youth employment is an important component of the continuum of care for youth services and the goal of the Tompkins County Youth Services Department. The 2012 Tompkins County Youth Needs Assessment identified youth employment as one of three major service gaps for teens in this community between the ages of 15 and 18. And the work of Youth Employment Service helps to prepare youth in this community for their eventual economic self-sufficiency. As a program that hires seasonal staff at living wage rates, and also employs teens in subsidized work, the increases in living wage and minimum wage for 2016 will have a direct effect on our services. Our Youth Bureau Director, Liz Vance, has already spoken more about the need for this 3% COLA increase and the impacts of its loss. And I hope you will support Youth Employment Service as we work collaboratively with you to strengthen the economic security and community engagement and career readiness of youth in Tompkins County. Thank you.
Thank you, Beverly. Nice job for your first trip here. Please come back. Joni Groom, City of Ithaca Youth Services. Hello, Joan.
Hello, James. Good evening, everyone. My name is Joni Groom, and I have lived in Ithaca for over 35 years, and specifically in the city of Ithaca for 23 years. I am a 25-year anniversary date at the Ithaca Youth Bureau, working specifically in recreation support services, which is a division of the Youth Bureau that supports children with disabilities attend and be a part of recreation programming. I am here tonight also to ask you to consider for the 3% COLA for our agency so that we can continue the great work that we're doing and provide the services that we really should be serving all children. I have good news and not so good news. The good news is that in our culture and in our society, we have made a lot of changes and attitude change for people with disabilities. A lot of you, I think, are my age, maybe a year or two older or younger. We can think back of some of the scandals that occurred in our country in Staten Island and Willowbrook and Letchworth and Penthurst and some of the horror stories of how children and adults living with disabilities were treated in our society. The good news is that there has been enormous change in our society. We have gone from exclusion to this term called inclusion. And that is a wonderful thing. That is a great thing. It's also the law. In 1990 or 1991, depending on which research article you refer to, the law states that all people of all abilities have the right to attend all public services, and that includes recreational programs. So the good news is that the intent is there, and the good news is that the attitude is shifting. The not so good news, though, is that we're not entirely doing that for all people who really need our services. There is a missing link between most children who have a disability and being truly included in a recreation program. And that missing link is the person who has the skills to help the child and help the other staff and help the other children in the programs have sensitivity and learn how to include everyone regardless of their differences. If we don't get this COLA, it would result in us not hiring one person over the summer to help two children go to what we call neurotypical day camp. It's only two kids, but that's a lifetime of memories and joy for a child. And there's the moral reason to be doing this. There's also the legal reason to be doing this. And I get quite emotional about this topic because I'm working with children who have disabilities nearly every day. And we serve 135 children, and there are literally thousands of children in Tompkins County who need our services. So I'd ask you to really dig deep in your heart, think about morals, think about the law, and truly consider giving us this increase. And I've been reminded, and of course I want to thank you for your ongoing support for all of our programs and for being such great members of this wonderful community. Thank you.
Thank you, Joan. Betsy Darlington. Mike, please approach. Mike, would you bend that down for Betsy if she needs it? Please.
There we go.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm Betsy Darlington. I live in the city. And I wanted to, leave it to me to break the thing. There we go, I think. I wanted to support your capital reserve fund for recreational, natural, and scenic resources protection. These are so important, and it's easy to sort of forget that, but I think that as we get more and more congested and more, especially in this city, more and more people, we really need these resources for everybody's physical and mental health and well-being. In addition, they also, natural resources that are protected, protect our water and our air and actually lower costs for many of these things. So I urge you to support that, and I think it's wonderful that you've put that into the proposed budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy. Next, Steve Nicholson from Caroline EMC. Welcome, Steve.
Did Betsy break it? How's that? I'm Steve Nicholson. I'm the chair of the Environmental Management Council. I've been chair for over 10 years now. And I'm talking about the OTR for our request to continue our process of revising the unique natural area boundaries. It's no coincidence that Tompkins County is the healthiest county in the state. And we know that the health is directly related to the health and quality of our environment. And as Betsy said, you know, it's extremely important to preserve what we have for the future. The Unique Natural Areas Inventory is a catalog of 195 areas in the county, representing about 13% of the land mass in this county. And we've identified these as being areas that are specifically worthy of protection. There's no legal protection granted to UNAs, but this is an inventory that's extremely useful for planning purposes and landowner decisions. So we hope that we can continue. So far, we've revised 78 of 194 boundaries, and we want to continue the process. The enabling legislation of EMCs specifically requires that we maintain an inventory of natural resources, and this is part of our charter. So, thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Brian Eden, EMC, Village of Cougar Heights.
Thank you. I'm on the UNA committee, a member. We began developing this inventory soon after we were given our charter by the state, and it's been beneficial to homeowners, to planning staffs, to the local elected officials, as well as supporting the county comprehensive plan and the conservation aspect of that plan. And, you know, we need to – this is not a static inventory. It's over 40 years old. Many changes in vegetation. There's deer depredation. We need to revisit some areas, especially ones that had very high value, and that's where we began. We prioritized the most valued UNAs first, and we're working down the list. So to have credibility, our committee has to rely on science. And we don't possess the science, you know, the volunteers in the committee don't possess that science, so we have very small consultant contracts. In our budget request, it was $4,600. You know, we need to hire people with field botany skills, ornithology, and geographic information specialists to record this information so that it's accessible to all. So we can't expect these consultants to volunteer their time. They've gotten an education. They've been trained. They have their families to support. So they have donated a lot of their time, but we have to give them some small remuneration. And this small amount that we've asked for leverages a lot of volunteer activity. We have 8 to 10 members of the committee. They put in a lot of hours. We meet monthly. And it benefits the county overall. So we'd like to continue to do this work for the county, and it would be important to be able to continue to hire consultants to support our work. So I hope that we can find a way to support this program. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Bob Beck, Dryden. Speaking about open space.
Thank you. My name is Bob Beck. I am a nearly lifelong resident of Tompkins County in the town of Dryden. I did, for part of a decade, live in New York City and southern Westchester area, but I had to come back to where I want to live. I came back about 35 years ago. I was a member of the Environmental Management Committee of this county for 12 or 15 years, and I was one of the people that got the Unique Natural Areas Inventory established. I feel very strongly about the importance of that in terms of landowners and decision makers in this county in terms of development projects and in terms of protecting our very, very special natural areas that we have. I was one of the founding board members and the first executive director of the Finger Lakes Land Trust, and that's a wonderful organization that's doing superb work, as you know, in terms of protecting open space. I'm currently the chair of the Town of Dryden Conservation Board, and we're working hard on reestablishing the trails from rail to trails connect, hopefully, from Ithaca through Dryden and maybe on to Cortland and Groton in time. All of these things, open space, recreational opportunities, parks, trails, are really important for the quality of life in our county, and I encourage your full support for these things. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Lorraine Moran, Ithaca Youth OTRs.
Hi, my name is Lorraine Moran. I am a member of the Joint Youth Commission for the past 12 years. I've sat on that committee as a representative of the town of Ithaca. The Joint Youth Commission is the planning group for youth programming in the inner ring towns. And I'm talking today, hoping, sorry, I have a bit of a sore throat today, hoping that you'll restore the two over-target requests for the inner ring towns. One is, well, one is 75,000 OTR for the municipal youth service system. And that system took a pretty big hit in 2011 and is operating with less folks doing that work for the municipal youth service system and less resources. And in order to have an actual system that helps us sort of plan and know what's really going on in the larger world, we really rely on the technical support of the municipal youth service system, the townships. We really need that information all the time at our meetings, and they help run a lot of aspects of that. And I believe that even planning boards and the municipalities would begin to just go away, really, without continued support. It's sort of like systems, you know, have a life. There's a creation. 30 years ago, the municipal youth service system was created. Then there's creativity, and actual good programs start to get run. And that has happened here. And then in 2008 to 2011, we've had sort of a dismantling to some degree of the youth programs. And I'm hoping that we just don't get to decay. And I don't think we are. We're in this sort of mild dismantling kind of place with those things. The 75,000 OTR would restore some level of job position and resource to the municipal youth service system group. There's another request. It's a $20,000 over target request, and it is for youth salaries and a cost of living increase for the Cornell Cooperative Extension Program managers to bring them more in line with other youth workers, not only in the city, but all around. Their salaries have been far lower, and that $20,000 is a request to bring their salaries more in line, part of it. And the other part of it is to support youth employment salaries for youth. And I would just encourage you to take a second look at those requests. I think you get an awful lot for smallish amount of monies from very committed people who work really, really hard and actually come up with great numbers. And so this is all the inner ring communities. It the $20,000 OTR does is for, in addition to the Village of Lansing, the Village of Cayuga Heights, the Town of Ithaca, the Town of Caroline. It also includes the Enfield and Danby for that $20,000 over request, and it would provide, again, youth salaries and that small increase in the salaries of the Cornell Cooperative Extension workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine. Anyone else who has not signed up wishing to speak here at the forum this evening? Let me describe to you what the process is from here on out until final approval of the budget. We have three meetings scheduled on the 13th, the 15th, and the 19th, and we call them voting meetings. The legislators have listened to you this evening. Other legislators have prepared amendments that were sent to county administration. They will be looked at on the 13th and the 15th if we need them, if we can't get them all done on one evening. The expanded budget committee will be here. It will need a vote of eight people or a majority of the people in the room to put it in the tentative budget. And that's the process that we will go through on the 13th and the 15th. Those meetings start at 5:30 in this room, and department heads, let's say, for example, what the CCE request that you were talking about, 20K, the director of CCE would be here, and the whole process would begin. Someone make a motion, second, discussion, vote. And that's how it works on the voting meetings. At the end of the three voting meetings, we would have that tentative budget that the county administrator spoke of. So, again, those meetings are open to the public, and if your particular interest is, you know, going to be looked at that night, it might make some sense for you to be here if you want to, but clearly a department head that handles your request will be here and talking about it. In a sec. Let me just say, before legislators speak, thank you very much for coming here. We have changed from the Tompkins County Public Library to this room for a number of reasons. One, we want the public to use the room. They're paying for the room, and it makes sense for you to all come here whenever you have the opportunity to do that, and we welcome you here. It's a great room. It works very well, and it makes more sense to us to be in the place that we do most of the business of the county. But thank you for coming. Will?
Thank you for coming. Jim, you said something that may have been a little confusing. I just want to make sure I'm clear. During our process, it will be a majority of who's in the room as we go on. But when we get to the end, we need 8 votes of the whole body to pass the budget. Am I right in that?
Yeah, and I really didn't speak to what happens at the end of the process. Yeah. You need a majority of the people in the room to pass an amendment to be put in the tentative budget.
Yeah, and this is somewhat problematic this year because, as many of you are probably aware, we are down by two legislators. So, you know, to get that final 8 votes, hopefully we'll have those folks back by when we get to that voting point.
Yeah, the final budget is voted on in November after the election. So one way or another, we'll have 2 more people here. And we will be up to full strength on for the November voting meeting on the complete budget. Any other comments from anyone? Any other legislators? Mike?
Jim, just one other reason why we like doing here is because this is being streamed out tonight. All your comments are going out over the Internet, so folks can tune in. They can come back on our website and look at them later.
Martha?
Just one question to Joe and about the, I think you mentioned the tax cap. I'm not sure that there is this tax cap, but I'm not sure you said what the percent is.
Yeah, there was a slide in here that was in the, when I was doing the strobe light effect, they were moving so quick.
Cap is 1.8.
Yeah, 1.8%. So our levy can grow by 1.8% over last year's and stay within the cap.
And the budget was built at a 1.3 increase
right.
levy.
That's correct.
And if I'm right, a 1% raise in the levy produces $450,000 each 1%. So you can do simple math and see what all that means to us. Mike?
Just say one thing. Sometimes folks don't understand the difference between the tax levy and the tax rate.
Right.
A lot of municipalities run around and say, well, the taxes have gone down because the rate has gone down. We don't emphasize that, even though in this budget there will be a small decrease in the rate. We emphasize what happens to the levy. The levy is the actual amount of money that we're taking by taxes from the taxpayers. So that's the true telling of how much your taxes are likely to go up. Based on, of course, assessment. If your assessment goes up, you're probably going to pay more taxes. If it goes down, you'll probably pay a little less. But the tax rate is dependent on a number of factors, and it's not a true barometer of what money is actually being taken from the taxpayers.
Let me add to that. A simple test is you get 2 years of your bill, your tax bill, and compare them. And you can tell if the tax rate goes down, the taxes could remain the same or bump up a little. So you need to look at your year-to-year bill and, you know, figure out, and that plays into what Mike said. So the levy is clearly something that we talk about all the time. That's what makes that $85,000, $81 million go for us here in the county. At any rate, is there any other questions from anyone in the audience? Again, thank you all for coming. Legislators, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
and the county administrator.